Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is TWiG, This Week in Google, episode 36 for April 4th, 2010. This Week in Topeka. This Week in Google is brought to you by GoToAssist Express, the easy way to provide instant tech support to your customers remotely. Support smarter with GoToAssist Express. For a free 30-day trial, go to GoToAssist.com/TWiG. It's time for TWiG, This Week in Topeka. I'm Leo Laporte, and joining us right now for our topics of the week, Jeff Jarvis, thank you for the kind of obligatory chuckle.
I like that.
BuzzMachine.com, the author of What Would Topeka Do? See, wouldn't it be good? Oh, look, now available on the iPad via the Kindle store. Have you looked to see if the iBook store has it?
No, it's a reader on Twitter told me it's not, and that upsets me because I thought HarperCollins, my publisher, had done a deal with them. So I'm blind on Twitter already.
Well,
I want to be everywhere.
Well, we'll push them to do that. Also joining us, as usual, the great, the wonderful, the lovely, and talented Gina Tripodi.
The jealous Gina Tripodi.
Well, I don't know. Gina's got making a political stand, and as with most political stands, it's painful.
I am without an iPad. It's for a few different reasons, but yes, I am without an iPad, and I am sad about it. I'm sad panda today, so I'll just ask questions, and I'll switch my user agent and look at websites in my browser as
That's
it
right.
would appear on the iPad, and weep.
Also joining us this week from Metafilter.com, the great Matt Howey.
Hello.
Good to have you back, Matt. Who is that? Whose shirt is that behind you there?
It's a bike jersey from a famous bike race last year.
Oh, that's cool. So you're a famous biker.
Not mine.
Matt does have an iPad. 2 out of 3, right?
Yeah, and there's the Kindle app.
Yeah, so this is...
And they gave me this cool clock. Have you seen this?
What? Who they?
What?
it's good bling. Hang that around your neck.
Yeah, check this out.
Yeah. Yo, yo, yo. Oh, man. Rockin'. You know, how long is it before rappers start wearing their iPads around their neck? Really, let's be honest. Can only be a little distance. So this, as you probably gathered if you just tuned in, is iPad Day, the day the iPad emerged. And Gina's the only one of us who doesn't have one.
There'll be an Android pad.
There will be an Android pad. Indeed.
Oh, there already are Android pads. Yeah. TechCrunch had a list of iPad alternatives today.
Oh, interesting.
Anybody get a Juju yet? Speaking of TechCrunch, the old Crunch pad renamed. Apparently, they sold 90 and had 15 returns or cancellations. So it's not. I did try to buy it. I thought, I'll be fair. I'll get a Juju and I'll have it side by side. And their web site was so poorly designed, I actually couldn't buy it. Cash in hand, and I couldn't buy it. So maybe
the 7 iPad alternatives. One looks really interesting. Is a German one that's coming out very soon, called. Come on, scroll. The WePad.
W E.
Yeah, or I guess they would say over there the VPad.
VPad. Yeah.
Webcam, 2 USB ports, App Store, and Android Marketplace. Of course, multitasking. Works with all ebook formats, larger screen, flash support. Disadvantages, says TechCrunch? None that we can see.
Now, I'm guessing TechCrunch doesn't mention the Juju.
No.
No. Even though probably that's the most best known. I think there's going to be some good Android choices.
Part of the thing about the iPad for me, or a tablet in general, is like I never find myself going like, wow, I really wish I had a tablet. Like I've got a netbook and I've got a laptop and I've got the Kindle. Like and part of me not getting an iPad was less political and more just like I have so many gadgets. Like I'm not necessarily impressed with the iPhone operating system and that whole thing. But like I just don't know where it would fit into my life.
I absolutely agree, Gina. And that's where I was. But until my dean in my school said, you have to have one. Wouldn't pay for it, but I use that as an excuse. But the fascinating thing for me was how Walt Mossberg this week viewed it, and so did, to some extent, Arrington, viewed it as a possible alternative to a laptop. For me, that's impossible to imagine because I do so much typing and writing. But if you're a salesperson, you know, if you're going to conventions and stuff, maybe. And that's what throws me. That's what surprises me here. Leo, do you think that having used her for a little bit, Matt, that this is at all possibly something
you'd
take on a trip with you?
And now I have I've paired it with the Apple Bluetooth keyboard, although it will pair with any Bluetooth keyboard. And you know, it's a relatively credible screen size, not so different from a netbook. But the two together are small, will, you know, go fit easily into a purse or backpack. And I think for a lot of what people do, it's going to be more than adequate. I don't see it really as its primary use case. I think most people will hold it like this and we'll have it in their arm and they'll be watching TV or they'll reading the news at breakfast or they'll be on a train or a plane. And I think it's very good for those times.
I think we're moving past the keyboard in so many ways with voice and, you know, if this thing had a camera, Google goggles, and the fact that things know where you are and all that, the need to type is going to decrease and decrease.
Now, Gmail did make a special interface. So, Gina, it's recognizing the user interface.
The user agent. Yeah. So you just go to Gmail the way that you normally would, and it should detect that it's the iPad.
Can you do
user
it with
agent.
Your apps account, Gina? You don't know, I guess.
You can. I tried it because I actually switched the user agent in my browser to check it out.
And?
You can. And, yeah, it's okay. I mean, it doesn't have the keyboard shortcut. I wouldn't use it on my desktop, but it looks good. I mean, I love the idea that you can have both your inbox open and view a message, you know, an open message at the same time. Mm-hmm. And that's the case for the mail app, right? The native mail app as well. But yeah, I mean, it looks nice. It's the expanded version of the, you know, iPhone version or the, you know, the Android version, basically.
What about the lack of multitasking? I mean, any Android tablet would, of course, have multitasking. How big of a deal breaker is that on a device like this?
I don't think it's that big of a deal since you're just concentrating on what's happening. I mean, it's a real good, like, media consumption device. So you're just concentrating on, you know, watching a movie or reading email. And you're not doing 10 things in the background like on a laptop you might. So I think it's not that big of a deal. I have noticed with the Gmail app that's amazing for reading email really fast and archiving stuff. I'm like an inbox zero dork, so it's great for bang, 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 get rid of stuff, but it's kind of terrible for writing email. Like, you know, it's clunky, the web interface isn't as nice, and you have the cramped keyboard and stuff.
I guess that's what we said initially was it's a content consumption device.
Yeah.
People like Cory Doctorow wrote a scathing article saying why I'm not going to buy an iPad and why you shouldn't either, kind of see it as the end of the world. They really have a political objection to it, I think. It's a closed device. It's, you know, DRM everywhere.
This is the war. We're you know, it's a very clear war between Android now and Apple here. And Schmidt at Davos said the war is going to be won on apps, you know, not on devices, not on OS, but on apps.
Right. Well, if we in an app world, this is the app. This is the king. This is an app. I mean, this you couldn't get a more. This is it, right? And when you're talking apps, you don't need multitasking because you're doing one thing at a time. How is Buzz on this thing? Did they do a special? I know I'm the only one still using.
That's a good question.
Doesn't look
we're all
like
going to be spending the whole show looking down.
It's the same as in Safari. They didn't do a special, but they could have. And
they didn't do a special Google Reader. I was really surprised.
Yeah, they did that on the iPhone when the iPhone came out.
Like, make a left pane, just make it like Gmail, like, you know, feed, and the full item on the right side.
Right.
But this works. A single
pane. I have to say, this works very nicely for Gmail.
Yeah.
And I think that it's a good metaphor for Gmail. I'm sorry.
One of the things that's gotten me so far is the constant quest for this being the tablet from Mount Sinai that's going to rescue media. And though there's some good apps, I think that, for instance, the Reuters app is really superb. And as Matt said, the ABC app is good. But what amazes me on this is the Time magazine.
One issue,
$4.99. And so I feel awful because I bought it because I had to buy it because I couldn't snark about it unless I actually saw it, even though I knew I was going to snark. All it is PDF.
Oh, that's horrible. Dude,
that's where we are. It's it's a movable PDF, and you go this and that way, and there's you know, once in a while a video in it, but it's just this return to editorial ego that I want to control the package, and I want you to go in my order. And the most amusing moment I had in it was there's a huge ad in there for the Wonders of Droid. That's good placement. That's great placement.
Well, of course, you saw, you know, both Time and Newsweek had Jobs and the iPad on the cover. And you saw on the back of Newsweek with it, they have a big iPad on the front. And on the back, Amazon bought a big Kindle ad, which is probably a pretty big waste of money at this point.
Yeah, the Kindle. Mm. I'm sensing I'm going to eBay it soon because prices are about to go.
Don't you think?
a glut of Kindles. Yeah.
The only thing is, Gina, that when I first picked up the iPad, Kindle had given me the expectation of weight, and iPad felt really heavy. Baratunda Thurston said that was his first reaction too. Just because, I mean, compared to a laptop, it's not. But just for this little thing in your hand, the Kindle really has a difference.
Right, right. The Kindle also feels like plastic too, and I imagine that.
Yeah, this feels much nicer.
The first one.
This is much nicer.
Yeah. The iPad feels nicer. I was watching, I guess Baratunde hosted like an iPad brunch today, so I was looking at some of his tweets, and he had said, a couple of people had said that without 3G, that the iPad was basically felt kind of useless when it was offline. Have you guys had a chance to have it offline?
That's why I also bought today the Cradle Point.
Yeah, or a MiFi. So or a MiFi,
I can go back, I can create my own MiFi since I'm stuck with AT&T and don't have MiFi. That way I can have MiFi now. So that's what made me decide that I could go ahead and buy this today without the Wi-Fi and without another AT&T account.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big thing you miss is the GPS.
But how does it know where I am? Is it knowing? Because the maps did target me. Is that because of my ISP?
I think it's Skyhook, which is a company that maps Wi-Fi access points, and they can triangulate.
It did a good job, I got to say.
Oh, that's interesting because Maps couldn't find me. Let me try again on that. Maybe it doesn't know where my Wi-Fi is. Maybe I'm not in the Skyhook database. I don't know.
Oh, because you're some weird
thing. Yeah.
Going back to the Time app, Jeff, tell us what you ideally, what it would have looked like. So you spent $5. What did you want to see?
Well, it's called a browser. You know, the problem is, I just don't want the package anymore. I want media people to be out and ways to come to me and distribute across the whole web. If I'm going to go to this package, you know, if I look at the Reuters app, it mixes, rather than just saying this is a serial product that goes from page 1 to page 100 or in Time's case about 35, you know, Reuters gives me a web-like appearance of saying here's the whole world of news. And when I go to the stock report, I can add my stocks and I can go to the stories I want. It gives me that ability for me to control the experience where literally at Time it is page, 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 as if it were a book. And I don't think media should be. You know, beyond that, given the limitations of what the iPad can't do, you know, I can't, it'd be nice if I could get into, you know, video comments or stuff like that. But of course it has no camera yet, won't do that. You know, typing is hard, but it just shows me the hubris of the editorial package these days in the age of the link.
So customization. So you think that the reader should be able to determine how to organize the magazine, basically?
Yeah, that there even is a magazine. I got into a pissy fit with some newspaper guy on Twitter just a few minutes ago. And, you know, Entertainment Weekly. And I said, yeah, I wouldn't have started Entertainment Weekly today as a magazine at all. Quite the contrary. And I'd have a far better business than they have these days. I think that's the problem. Is it just shows me how outmoded the notion of a magazine is. And that's painful to say, actually.
Jeff,
have you seen Popular Science?
Yeah, I was just going to ask Mac about that. Yeah.
What does it do, Matt?
It's like the future of what a magazine could look like. Let me see here.
Go ahead.
You can just drag, you can drill down whenever you feel like into an article. Like, you can go in different directions. It's like it was a big concept piece of kind of like here's a new device, let's try new things.
That is $5, but then do you have to subscribe to PopSci to continue to have more stuff? Or
you get one issue, I think, with that $5, and I assume new ones. I would say for the sake of research, check it out, Jeff. Like, just like, this truly is the
same
future
time,
of
Mac. Yeah. I'm doing it right now, Matt. You just made him $5.
Yeah, I think you're probably not alone. And you were saying, Matt, also the ABC app you thought was a pretty promising UI.
Yeah. And I think what Jeff's saying, like, everyone can be lazy with this, just like when podcasts came out, you know, like talk radio and TV shows just basically repurpose their existing content. But then some, you know, shows kind of got it, what it could be, something different. And they had, you know, new material, or they had, you know, interview shows that were only available in podcasts. So, like, ABC looks like, you know, what TV could look like in the future. And I'm sure, you know, if NBC comes out with an app, it might just be, you know, click on four shows to watch a show or something.
It's just so clear and easy. It's just that you know, this is the, you can't see with the light.
It's a glary screen, I have to say.
Yeah, it is. And well, better that than the smudgy screen.
It also is smudgy. Here, I'll show it on mine because I've got a...
And you can dive into, like, the daily schedule and click on the last two episodes you missed, you know. You can jump down to Thursday at 8 p.m., you know, from the front screen. It's kind of cool.
I used the Netflix app. If you have a Netflix account, you can stream your Netflix movie to it, and the quality is very nice. I mean, this is a... That's what's, I think, very interesting about this, is it's a kind of a multi-homed device. It has use cases for everybody from the Scrabble fan to somebody who wants to watch a movie on a plane to somebody who wants to read a newspaper at breakfast. What about the New York Times kind of did an odd thing. They have a New York Times Select, which is editor's choice, I guess they call it, a way stripped down version of the New York Times.
I don't understand. I thought they were the poster child for this device. They were on stage with Jobs. They had all kinds of stuff, and I don't understand. Did somebody drop the ball there or what?
Well, at least it's free. I mean, that's, you know, and it's very legible. It's very readable. No pinch and zoom. You have to just, you know, tap on things, and you can't get it bigger or smaller. It does seem like...
Meanwhile, the New York Times increased the price of its Kindle app, which is not very satisfying.
Right. And there's, this is ad-supported, by the way. This has ads, so... I have to think that eventually they're going to do a paid version, or maybe a version for people who are already subscribing or that kind of thing. This is just kind of a web page, and not even as functional as the web page, which is a little frustrating, a little exactly what you're talking about, Jeff, which is the wrong way to go.
You know, it goes back. We started discussing this last week, and I'd be really eager to hear all your thoughts on this. I've been arguing for a while that we're moving from a page-based, destination-based web to a stream flow-based web. But then we also see the other alternative here is we move from a page and site-based web to an app-based web, where you do have closed worlds. They do have more control. You can't or don't need to really multitask. The concern I have for that is it becomes more walled garden-ish. It becomes more about, look at just the stuff in my brand. And so we go back to kind of a media destination brand thing. And I don't know if that's going to work long term, but I do see that starting to happen here. And I even wonder when we get to web apps in Chrome OS, whether that's the case. I can't get my head around whether apps are the future or just a last minute salve to the pain of big old media brands.
Yeah. And of course, the simplicity of apps rapidly disappears as people start to do more sophisticated ones. This is a Autodesk Sketchpad. It has all sorts of odd features, and thankfully is more complicated. It looks more complicated to me than anything I would see on a desktop. And in order to get more powerful apps on here, you have to kind of play with the UI in ways that I think are non-intuitive.
Right.
So I think maybe it's best to think of this as a content consumption device, a player, and. Even, you know, as much as Corey didn't like it, the idea that you still can use the browser, you know, gives you some hope that, you know, I can still go to the New York Times in my browser and read the paper there, right?
Yes. It still it seems like apps, though, feel like this way to, like, here's a way to access the web totally sanitized and totally on the terms of the person who made the app and approved by Apple. You know, you still have this filter, this gatekeeper.
If they took the browser out, I'd feel worse about it.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, that's not even Apple's fault necessarily. It's Time Magazine's fault for saying this is how we view our relationship with our public. Start here, then go there.
Right.
Right, like start at page one and go to page two, you mean.
Right, but I agree with, absolutely agree with Gina on this. Yeah, it's that's the mood that bothers me here.
Yeah, this idea that like apps are this way to sanitize that the web, a way to access the web, but through like a very controlled, a tightly controlled channel.
I mean, this is not bad. I'm looking at the New York Times in Safari, and you know, and it has Pinch, which is, you know, I can zoom in on stuff with which I can't do in the New York Times app. So if they're trying to drive people to the web, maybe that's what these silly apps are for. I mean, this works nicely. It rotates. It does everything I'd want. And this is the web page. You know, it's got all the features of the web page.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Leo, before we went on, I was watching your feed on my iPad.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
It stopped after two or three minutes each time, but that was cool. So it's not.
That's HTML5.
It is HTML5.
And H.264, okay. Yeah. So obviously, if you're watching the show on live.twit.tv, you're watching it in Flash. But if you go to live. Now, actually, I should take a look and see how this works. If you go to live.twit.tv on the iPhone, we see the user agent and we present you with a special page. And I think we've set that up. Yes, we have.
Yes, you have. Well, at least that's what it did. Yes.
So you can get an application. That does this too. We have a 99-cent application that lets you watch and has more stuff than the web page does because it has the chat room and has the calendar and some other things built into an interface designed for this screen. So
for the iPad.
Yeah, it's an iPad version of our app.
Okay.
So
as another 99 cents.
Well, you know, this was free, and I told the guy who wrote it, charge for it because you put a lot of work into it. And so the chat room is in there, and you can join it. I'm not crazy. We're going to work on the design a little bit. It's a little postmodern sci-fi, but that's the point. Is it does work?
That's so meta.
As a content creator, I think this is really a nice thing to have, but it's not necessary. And you know, our business model doesn't. And I think maybe this is the key. It doesn't require you use this or any other way. We want to make our goal is to make it, and I think this is what every content creator should be aspiring to, make it available in as many ways as possible.
That's exactly what I'm saying. The idea that a media brand is still a magnet that will draw us doesn't work anymore. The media have to go to where the people are.
Yeah, but we can do that because we're ad-supported content. So eyeballs are good for us. And as long as we get more eyeballs, it pays for itself. And we can count them. That's kind of important, too, the ability to count them. But, yeah, we want you to listen. We want you to watch. We want you to, you know, download. Whatever makes sense for you, that makes us happy. That seems like the only way to do it, frankly.
I think that's where media is.
Yeah. And selling a $4.99, you know, we've never done that. We've never sold, you know, Twig 36 for a buck. We've never done that.
I mean, I think you have opportunities to do other revenue streams like direct sales of merchandise. You know, if I go to the, I'm forgetting the name of the, what was my old phone with the, what was the old Palm phone with my little keyboard on it?
The Trio?
Trio.
So Trionauts. And was a great blog that now has a Nexus One site and so on and so forth. And they're making a business out of direct sales of merchandise. The stuff you talk about, I think you could do a Best Buy store at Twit and Twig, where you could sell direct merchandise, and it's just basically another way to advertise. Just you're getting paid on true performance,
right? Yeah, we've looked at all those models. That's just easier for me just to put an ad in the damn thing.
Yeah, I know. At some point, you could hire a head of merchandising who could probably make you some money there.
Yeah.
I think you could have events.
Yeah.
I think you could have education.
I mean, look at the turnout they get for the Dig Nation events. It's pretty
exactly.
Awesome. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, and all those, well, the chat room is the proof. Hey, chat roomers, wouldn't you like to meet in person, or would that frighten you too much?
That's scary.
Yeah. So, Gina, oh, I wish I could do this. We have a request from Johan Hillerstrom on Twitter to try out Wave on the iPad.
Oh.
Oh, okay. Well, so if you, this is what I think is going to happen, although you guys can tell me. If you guys go to wave.google.com in Safari, you will probably get a message saying that the browser isn't up to snuff. But there's a great iPhone app called Waveboard, which is available. I think there's a version that's free, and I think there's one that's like $2.
I've got it.
And I'm not sure if, do you have Waveboard? I think yep. Waveboard is probably the best way to try it out. I don't know if the developer released an iPad version, but hopefully. But yeah, I've been thinking that Wave would render really nicely on the iPad because you just have a lot more room. Yeah, that's looking good, Leo. Look at that.
And that's in Safari.
And now, did you have to click a go-ahead link when
nope.
you... Yeah. Oh, okay. Just load up. Oh, that's great. That's great.
So I can... I mean, this is a very nice touch. Makes sense in touch, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Wave just crashed my Safari.
Oh, it just crashed mine.
Wow.
And it just crashed mine.
Yes.
Okay, so we'll have to use the app. You know, even the iPhone apps that aren't designed for the iPad usually scale pretty nice. You know, you'll be able to use them. Especially if it's just text. It's the UI, the widgets that don't work scale so well because you don't have the bitmaps.
So I'll confess my stupidity with the thing. I had to sync like 3 or 4 times because every time I synced and I went to the iPod app, I'd say, where the hell are my videos and TV shows? So I'd sync again and I didn't realize there's a separate button on this thing for video.
There is some usability stuff that you have to get used to.
Yeah.
There is some different stuff.
And you have to charge it separately than syncing? It doesn't
depends
charge?
On what you're charging. No, you can charge it. If you plug it into the back of an iMac or a laptop, it should. It has a 10-watt adapter. But some people are reporting it didn't work on my USB hub, my powered hub. Some people are reporting it won't work on some devices. But it's variable. It takes a lot of juice.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you're getting the battery life people are getting is amazing.
Right. Walt Mossberg said it was actually more than Apple promised. You got, 11 and a half hours to maximum use, right?
Yeah. And so that's it. So did Annie Anako. So did a lot of people. So that's pretty impressive. You know, I'm at 62%. I haven't charged it at all. This is out of the box. I think that this is the kind of thing you're going to be able to use all day.
Speaking of Mossberg, what fascinated me was Mossberg versus David Pogue in the Times, where Mossberg's take, as we said earlier, was, wow, could this really be take some major function of the laptop? Whereas Pogue wrote 2 separate reviews, and really what he was saying was, it's your grandma's computer.
Right.
Yep.
I think that's doing grandma a disservice, by the way. Poor grandma. She's always the whipping girl. I'm using this. I think a lot of geeks are using it and are very happy with it. So, we'll see. The proof will be in a month or two. If we're still using it as a primary device, or if we've gone back to our laptops and said that was nice, that was fun.
My best use case I can imagine so far is I'm going in 2 weeks to Germany to a conference called Republika, which I think is the kind of German speaking South by Southwest. And I can imagine spending all day at a conference with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
You know, watching the Twitter, doing this, doing that. Yeah, mm-hmm. Not having to lug around the laptop, worry about the battery power. I could see this. You're dubious, Gina.
But taking notes in sessions?
Yeah, a little bit. Because I don't take, gigantic notes.
Right, right. Just jot quick things. What is the keyboard like anyway? I mean, how bad is the key? How bad or how good is the keyboard? Can you type out a sentence pretty comfortably or does it feel strange?
I keep stroking the wrong keys, but then I do that on the, especially on the, my Nexus One as well.
Nexus One. Yeah, yeah. See, I tend to, so at night if I'm like watching TV or watching something I don't really care about very much, I often will have my phone with me and we'll be browsing Twitter and just kind of checking email and archiving email and that kind of thing. And I can imagine using the iPad for that, but I'm often need to kind of answer emails and I often need to like kind of, quote emails and answer in line and that kind of thing isn't easy to do on the phone for sure. And it doesn't sound like it would be easy to do on the iPad as well. I mean, I guess I feel like I type or I input information more than maybe I'm more of a creator than a consumer.
Yeah,
I don't
you're a programmer, yeah, so you're going to type more. Yeah, yeah.
And I think I'll be the same way. You actually create useful things. I just create words, but
words are useful, Jeff.
Words are useful.
It's all words.
Well, Leo's going away over there.
Oh yeah, Leo's that's looking pretty comfortable.
Did you actually say something right, or does it?
Yeah, no, like it's pretty good.
I would love to see a shape writer or swipe on the iPad. That's what I would love to see.
I was talking about that with Jake today, too. I wonder whether, because he said, you can't write on the darn thing. And he said, I would have sold it with a pen. And I think that probably brings back horrible memories.
No, we don't want that. Yeah.
Yeah. Right?
We definitely don't want that. You know, it's interesting. It's kind of weird to have a more normal keyboard, but still have these kind of strange iPhone replacement things going on and all of that stuff. It's going to take a little getting used to. But no, I think this is quite usable.
That's Southwest. I never carried a computer. I just used my phone the whole time. I could totally see using this at a conference because I was using like Foursquare and Twitter, and I was even taking notes in the Notes app, just a sentence here and there. I think this could totally work at a conference.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to write a program in it, Gina, probably, but...
Yeah, no, definitely not.
It's pretty darn usable. Actually, I'm surprised. This is the first time I've used it. Now, I paired it immediately with a Bluetooth keyboard, and then it just uses a regular keyboard, and that's very usable. If you propped this up like this, it would be no different than a laptop, except there's no mouse.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's a touchscreen laptop.
Yeah.
All right, there is Google News.
Google? Who's that?
Google. Google. The Google has been up to something, I believe. Well, there's a redesign on YouTube. This kind of bit us. We were trying to upload some video a couple of nights ago, and we couldn't. We didn't know what was going on, and then we found out, oh, they're changing the UI on YouTube. Pretty nice, too, I think. A very clean, graphically much simpler interface. Anybody have an opinion on it?
It looked like a beta when I first saw it. Like, it kind of looked like, what, did they really make that live? Like, I mean, it's kind of cool that half the stuff's gone, but it feels like an early CSS draft of a page to me, because there's just like...
I think it's too simple.
I couldn't find like other videos from this user going down the side. All I saw was related videos from everybody in YouTube. So it was like, it felt like it took away a feature at first. And it's just sort of like raw, like it's all HTML text. Like there's lack of graphics. I mean, that it looked a little rough. Like it looks like when you have a designer who works in, you know, CSS whiz, early mock-ups you'll get before a site launch will look a lot like, you know, in the new YouTube page. And then YouTube was useless for like a day.
Right.
Every single video's comments was, I hate the look of this page.
Right.
I want to hear about the video, not...
They got rid of the star system for voting. They replaced that with thumbs up, thumbs down, a very, very dig-like system. They said because people only use 0 stars or 5 stars. They never, very rarely did anything in between. But you're right. There are things like, you know, it's harder to find stuff. But then the embed looks kind of nice. You can mess with it a little bit here. I don't know. I like it that it's cleaner. I think it was getting pretty crufty. Mm-hmm. But I can see what you're saying, that some of the things,
Ben,
that you might have been used to.
What you say about that design, isn't that kind of true of everything out of Google?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, let's talk about the beautiful design of the iPad and then Google's web app design.
Yeah.
There's a difference. Yeah. I obviously love Google. That's why we're here, but yikes. Although the little page tour is pretty neat. I confess, I'm not a big YouTuber, so this is the first time I'm really looking at this. But if you click on the take a quick tour thing, it kind of takes you around the page in a neat little way.
Oh, yeah? Where's that?
On the right hand side, there's a blue box that says "Welcome to the new video page."
Oh, okay.
I don't know if
I guess I've taken like that already. Yeah, maybe I've taken it already.
Just go to an individual. Oh, you can exit out.
I'm going to a Walmart ad. Stop. Okay. Stop it.
Yeah, no ads unless they pay here.
Yeah. well, anyway, all right. So there you go. There you have it. New YouTube interface. There's a Google story.
The other big news in video and Google is that Google bought Episodic.
Now, what's Episodic?
It's funny you're going to ask me that. I believe that it is a service that enables people to do episodic TV better and have the functionality to do that, including organizing episodes across a series, charging for subscriptions, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's another ad platform.
Well, it's another ad, but it's also another SOP to media companies, I think, not SOP to, but another opportunity for media companies to create episodic TV. You know, Jeff Pulver was among a few of the people who some time ago tried to create guides to episodic TV and separate episodic from the one-off viral stuff.
Right.
Blip has kind of emphasized episodic as well. And episodic, of course, is the loyalty of television itself. So I think there may be something in here that shows a direction for Google and its relationship to media companies and the wisdom of trying to get past viral, because you can't really control viral. I was at a really good conference at Columbia this last week called the Bright, BRITE 10 conference. And I'm suddenly forgetting his name, chief research scientist for Yahoo, Australian, it'll come to me, was there talking about research they did on influencers and Twitter. And it really struck me at some point that there is no such thing as an influencer, that it's the messages that are usually influential. And the problem in that is that you can't bottle it and resell it, which is why marketers hate to hear this. And the problem for YouTube then is you can't predict, bottle, resell, and figure out, obviously, when things go viral there. And they're kind of dependent upon that. And if they're going to put advertising on things, better to put it on something that has a loyal returning audience, which has demographics you can predict.
Yeah, well, I think that if in a way, what you this also goes hand in hand with the YouTube redesign, because really what they're creating is a place not where you put groin shots and lip syncing, but a place where mainstream media types and maybe some smaller ones are going to put their content. I think that in some ways that's kind of antithetical to what YouTube started YouTube and what YouTube's all about. I mean, if YouTube becomes more, it becomes a Hulu, will it still be desirable? It feels like a bait and switch. Actually, probably be more desirable, but it feels like a bait and switch. Like you came to YouTube for Chocolate Rain, and you left, you know, with 30 Rock.
Can't you have both? Don't they live happily together?
Yeah.
Can you?
Yeah, I don't think it's a zero-sum game. I think YouTube's just trying to become like Google, like all-encompassing. All video is just think YouTube. Just like any search, you think Google.
Right. Well, okay. Yeah, you're right. I think the advertisers, though, are a little unhappy with the idea that they might show up in a groin kick video.
That's why they do want to separate out, and they want to know kind of an authoritative rule of who are the good people, who are making reliable stuff, who can we count on?
Yeah, so there is pressure, I would imagine, on a platform like YouTube to kind of, if you want to be a good platform for advertisers, then you want to have some way of kind of, wasn't this a problem MySpace had? Still does. Which is, nobody wanted to buy an ad on MySpace because you had no idea where your ad was going to end up.
But Leo, aren't you the perfect person to judge this? I mean, if Google came to you and said, we now have a better platform for you to organize and present the episodes of
series
you make.
Yeah.
And because you're Leo Laporte, we love and trust you. And because we, Google, have huge advertising contracts and concepts, we'll sell you on or off YouTube. Wouldn't that be music to your ears?
Yeah, well, and we're doing it, basically.
Okay.
You know, we're putting all our content, including this show, on YouTube. We have a YouTube, you know, youtube.com/twit, and there's channels for every show there. And I would love better episode controlling things. I just think in time, what happens is there's pressure on people like YouTube to get rid of the kid stuff and the lip syncing stuff. And I think that actually could be a problem for it, because what they sell people like me and NBC and ABC is a crowd. They sell the audience. But if the audience is coming to watch Numa Numa, I don't know if that's the right. It does seem a zero sum game to me for some reason, Matt. I don't know why. It seems.
I think Google's like, it's just like with blogs, right? There's 20 million zillion blogs. They're not very useful. They're not very ad friendly, I guess, or to advertisers. But Google figured out this magical tool. Like, you know, it's a total long tail thing to make, you know, like AdSense work on those.
Right.
Ages, no matter what someone's talking about. I think with like the millions of random videos, you think like, yeah, I don't know, 1-5% are really good and kind of rise above, and you know, I guess they go viral, but they also, you know, there might be good work done by an independent,
right?
And then, you know, Google's gonna flow ads to that,
right?
I think they don't know the answer to the question of how do we monetize all these videos for grandma, but they will. You know, someday.
And
someone's 20%. Someone's 20% time.
Yeah.
I mean, the other trick to this is that, and Hulu kind of ruined it because of the business deal going awry, but you take shows like Colbert and Daily Show, and you turn them into snippets. You snippetize them.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the best bits, and the best bits become your best marketing for the rest, which the networks have realized.
So they get that idea. They don't feel like it's cannibalizing there. See, I think that's what they thought with Saturday Night Live, is that, well, all the funny parts are on YouTube, so nobody has any incentive to watch the show.
I mean, years ago, going back, you know, 4 years ago, Betsy Morgan, who most recently was the CEO of Huffington Post, was then at CBS, said that when somebody put up a pirated clip from Letterman, they would do the takedown, but then put up the exact same clip themselves.
Ah, interesting.
And tell the person, here it is.
Uh-huh.
Because it is a recommendation. It's somebody, it's right. Smart. It's somebody, I don't know if they do that anymore.
Now,
but,
why
but,
would they do that? Tell me that.
Because it was high quality. They would right. Like, they put up like a HD version.
Oh,
you know,
I see.
So it wasn't some
So they knew somebody
kid.
Wanted it.
Right. Yeah. And that's the smart thing to do. I don't know if they still do it at CBS because CBS doesn't, you know, isn't as forward thinking, I think, now. But,
right.
But that's the way to take advantage of this. And then you make your stuff embeddable around the whole web. That's to me where media has to go. Is all media have to become embeddable.
We're going to take a break, come back with more. Our guests, Matt Howey, the man who started Metafilter, metafilter.com. It's great to have you, Matt. You said that Saturdays are bad for you. We found a time when you weren't busy dying yeah. Easter eggs or hiding them or anything like that. Also, Jeff Jarvis from buzzmachine.com, the author of What Would Google Do? And the great Gina Trapani of the Complete Wave. Whoop, that's not you. There you are, CompleteWaveGuide.com. And her blog is SmarterWare.org. But we want to take a little break. You may wander off, peoples, because I'm going to talk about Go to Assist. No, not you, not the audience.
Oh,
just
no,
the,
no,
just
the audience
panelists.
Stays there and listens to this
you
important message.
You stay. Or take the iPod with you. The iPad, it's made for going to the bathroom. Just take it on with you. That's exactly what Steve Jobs said. He didn't want to make basically a bathroom computer, but he has. So I want to talk a little bit about GoToAssist.com. You know, the folks at Citrix, they are pretty impressive. They really have got the remote access thing down. In fact, I know they're doing iPad apps for some of their products. It's very exciting. GoToAssist is for Macs and Windows, designed to help you if you're a support professional, an IT professional. It uses their remote access technology to make it easier for you to do remote support. You can be a support hero. Go to GoToAssist.com/twig right now. You can try it free for 30 days. They have day passes. If you're a part-time support person, if you're a full-time support person, you'll love the features. Like you can run 8 different sessions at the same time. So start a scan, move to the next one. Start an install, move to the next one. You can copy install files or fixes or patches from your computer to the guest computer. You can see what's running on the computer you're supporting, what operating system, what security software, what software in the background. I can go on and on. It really is designed for support, a great way to do it. You can even let the person you're supporting look at your computer. Or if they're not there, you can do unattended support. GoToAssist.com/twig. Give it a try today. 30 days absolutely free from the folks at Citrix. GoToAssist.com/twig. So we had a Droid user in the studio today who was very... What is that you got there, Jeff?
Well, is GoToMeeting an iPad app?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Isn't that exciting? You can do your... that's a great application for this. It's just instead of carrying a laptop, you just go into a meeting. Well, you just have this. I could think of a lot of good applications for it. Anyway, we had a Droid user on the show yesterday. He said 2.1. It's finally being pushed out by Verizon.
Oh, yeah. My brother got his today, too.
Hallelujah.
My brother texted me to say, I updated 2.1 all by myself without calling you. Aren't you proud? Because I've been his, I've been his Android kind of consultant. So shout out to my brother, Joey. Nice
Yay.
Job, Joe.
Yay, Joey. Well done.
And he's watching right now.
Hey, Joey. Is he in Brooklyn? Where is he?
In New Jersey.
New Jersey. All right.
Close enough.
So this has been a problem.
You got a problem with that?
Yeah. Hey, how you doing? This has been a problem, though, is this fragmentation. I had somebody call the radio show, said, I have an Aeris 1.6. And you're watching the Motorola Droid get updated, but not the Motorola Aeris. It's got to be frustrating. According to Engadget, off the record, Chris Ziegler, writing for Engadget, says people told him at CTIA that the next version of Android, Froyo...
Froyo, baby. It's not pastries. It's desserts.
It's desserts. We thought it was baked goods.
We did. Cupcake, donut, eclair, Froyo.
Froyo will take big strides towards stopping this OS fragmentation. You've got, as a developer, to do 4 different versions if you want to run on 1.5, 1.6, 2.0, and 2.1. So how do they fix it?
Well, they're going to be decoupling the apps from the operating system, so that they can push out updates to apps like Maps and Gmail and all that through the market as usual. And I think that's the kind of the main thing. And then Gingerbread, which comes after Froyo, is going to be basically they've been iterating the platform. They've been iterating Android faster than carriers or manufacturers, or carriers rather, have been pushing out updates.
Right.
So I think things are going to slow down a little more with Gingerbread. So they're going to decouple those apps, and they're going to keep, which will actually be good for people like Cyanogen, right, who had to decouple those apps in order to distribute his ROM, because the apps are closed source and Android itself is open source. So this sounds like a good solution coming up, and it sounds like they're... This will be a step toward doing that anyway.
Good.
Can't the carriers drag their feet and still say that, like with Aeris, there's all those custom weather apps and desktop managers? Can't they just say, well, it doesn't run in 2.1 or 2.2 or 2.3, so we're going to stay on 1.6
right.
or something?
Right.
I mean, that'd be my fear.
Mm-hmm.
And we've
my
seen.
My Droid currently claims it's up to date.
Oh,
and it's
man.
2.01. Oh. Come on.
Oh, man. I hate it when that happens.
It's lying to me.
Yeah, it is really the carriers, isn't it? However, so this is really designed to make it easier for developers to create apps. Are they going to make universal apps?
Well, I think they're going to decouple the sort of built-in Google apps, right? So like Maps and the Gmail client, for example, are just come with the distribution. This is how I understand it. So like those things are going to be just separate in the market as usual, and updates will get pushed out. So I'll be able to update those apps the usual way versus having to, you know, wait for the whole OS update to get out.
I see. Well, that's good news. I mean, they got to do something about this. This is the single biggest problem. And, you know, complexity is the problem. And that's what happens when you compare iPhone and iPad to a Droid and Android. Is it's more power, but also more complexity. Is there a way to simplify it? I mean, you certainly don't want to shoot yourself in the foot by having more OS versions than you need to. That's just unnecessary complexity.
Right.
I had a problem with web development. I think I just added it as a Twig bookmark. I bought an Aeris and a Droid on one day in December to start testing out Metafilter and other apps. And like our actual web apps look completely different because one was in 1.5 maybe, and the other one was running 2.0. And I was like, I had to come up with different CSS? Come on. Like, it's crazy. They look completely different. But eventually, I think the Aeris updated to 2.
Let's see other choices in here, other things we can take a look at.
There's OAuth and Gmail.
That's a big deal, isn't it?
What does that mean?
It is a big deal. It's a big deal. OAuth is cool, and I only know it's cool because I'm using it to authorize the software application I'm working on, Think Tank, with Twitter. So OAuth is a way for a user to grant an application access to their data without giving their password, right? So like, there's this program called Gmail Drive that you can download to your desktop, and you can store, you can just drag and drop files to it, and it'll store it in your Gmail account. You have to enter your username and password into this, you know, your Gmail username and password into this application, which is not a Google application, and it should make you feel weird and not want to do it. It's a security issue. OAuth lets you authorize an application, say, I'm going to let Gmail Drive or any other application access my data. And you can define the terms. You can say read write. You can say read only without handing over your password. So it's great because it means you can change your password. You can change your Gmail password and all your applications don't break. It means that you can limit the kind of access that an application has to your data, so read or read write. And you can, if an application starts to behave in a way that you don't like, you can deny it access from within Gmail. So basically what it means is that an application like Gmail Drive can authorize without giving your password. And you can also just have web apps do things with your Gmail that Gmail doesn't currently do. So the first, the first application that's using OAuth is this iPhone application called Smart Push, which filters notifications on email. Now, I haven't tried out Smart Push by myself, but I believe that you can say, you know, only notify me of new Gmail if it comes from someone in my contacts, or, you know, define a kind of a list of rules. So this is pretty cool. So like Gmail had Gmail Labs for a while, right? Where like they could, you know, roll out experimental features, but not anyone could write a Gmail Lab feature. Like only in Google, you know, could you write a Gmail Lab feature. But with OAuth access, beyond, you know, IMAP and POP, you can really kind of build web applications on top of Gmail and access Gmail data and do things with it.
So is this beyond just simply the identity of Facebook Connect and Friend Connect being out there? This is more of an kind of an API without identity.
Right. It's an API to your inbox without giving your password over. So I think Anil tweeted something like, oh, you know, I'd love it if Dropbox, you know, automatically imported any attachments I get in my Gmail,
ooh,
Dropbox,
yeah,
to be able to access and just automatically put in my Dropbox, that kind of thing.
It, like Redux, I think he was talking about, that does
and
that.
Gina, didn't you guys break that story on Lifehacker a couple of years ago, the famous Gmail archiver that like stole people's username and password?
Yes.
So, I mean, that's the worry, right? That like, unchecked, some unscrupulous developer could be, you know, transmitting your username and password up to their server. And
right.
And that's not a big deal with like Twitter. I feel bad putting my username and password into any app, but Google, I mean, my Twitter username and password, whatever, they can make fart jokes under my name, big deal. But with Google, it's like my AdSense, like money, thousands of dollars are coming in every month, my bank account information, my Google Health. You know, they could be looking at my medical tests. Like, if you get my Google password, I mean, you get my life. It's crazy how much of my life's in Google. And it's been creeping up year after year. But I really am nervous about giving out my Google username password to anything. Like, I hardly ever use Google Reader apps for anything, like the iPhone.
Well, that's probably why there weren't very many, as far as I know, apps that used your Gmail login. Nobody was willing to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
Were there apps that did this?
Oh, yeah. There's lots of apps.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Give me your Gmail.
Well, the Gmail Drive is kind of one of the few that I remember, you know, featuring on Lifehacker and being like, this is just a brilliant idea. It's totally not something that Google would approve of. You know, when Gmail first launched and it was like, oh, my God, I have gigabytes of space, on, you know, in the cloud, which is not a big deal now. But back in the day, it really was. So, yeah, this is pre-Jockbox era, you know.
A year or two ago, everything would ask for find your friends. Just give us your
Google login. Oh, that's
Google
true.
Login.
You're right.
Like,
yeah.
Ooh, Twitter did it, Facebook did it, Evite did it, everyone did it. And then we came up with OAuth because nobody wanted to, well, the geeks didn't want to do it.
All right.
So what other things, what other Google arenas should be using OAuth? What other applications elsewhere should be doing what this would do? What does it enable?
Well, I guess it's like Flickr, right? Like Flickr's API is very granular. You can say what an app can do with your Flickr. Can it look at your private Flickr photos? Can it post to Flickr or not? And I think Gmail is a kind of weird one. And I guess it'll be like Gina has been saying, like it'll be kind of like a Google Labs. Like anyone can come up with a crazy Gmail hack. But I'm more interested in, I don't know, Google Reader being more. Like I could do that in anything. I don't know what else. I mean, I wish Google Analytics and Google even AdSense, like I wish I had remote access to it or desktop access, or I could have dashboards in my web apps, you know, my private admin panels on my web servers that could be pulling in some information from those through an API. I'd be very happy about that.
Is this redundant at Facebook because of the Facebook platform?
Yeah, I mean, I guess Facebook Connect is sort of their attempt at, well, they're more about identity, and then as you do identity, it also links apps together. So they're trying to roll identity and authentication and, you know, application APIs into one thing. So when you log into, you know, Foursquare with your Facebook thing, it's going to start posting to Facebook on your behalf, usually by default without telling you, and you have to go in and turn that off.
It's so annoying.
Kind of annoying. I like the way Flickr does it because it's more developer friendly. It's like, you just gave us, you know, access. Are you okay with the following four things, you know, listed? It's kind of a pain because you have to go through three or four screens of yes, I trust them. Yes, go ahead, post. but it's better than the Facebook flip side, which is turn everything on by default and, you know.
And you have to opt out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Android is similar too, right? Like, so when you install an app on Android, you always get that pop-up that says this application needs these following rights, you know, access to your network, access to your contacts. and then you have to hit OK. That's not the case with iPhone apps. Don't do that, right? Don't give you that sort of breakdown of everything an app requires.
No, they just ask for like geolocation is usually the only sort of, you know. Oh, and they'll ask you if you want to be annoyed by the little, you know.
Notifications, stat. Yeah.
Yeah, the notifications. Mm. But yeah, network access. I always thought that was kind of silly on Android. Like, it's on the phone, of course. Go ahead.
It is a long list, which nobody reads. And sometimes several pages. You read it?
No, but I like that it's there. I like that I can check. I mean, something that's streaming video and you're like, outright, you know, I want to know whether or not it's going to use, if I didn't have it on the metadata plan, I don't know. I like the idea that apps are upfront. Like, I like the idea of knowing.
Exactly. It strikes me that Google would have been better off if they had put Buzz through this OAuth path so that you would have gotten all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That they went ahead and integrated it all too much because it's all Google. But if they'd actually had a separation of Buzz and enabled that, they might have solved some of the problems they've had.
Oh, like when you opted into Buzz, if it had said to you, okay, we want this,
but if you
this,
literally
this.
Made it use OAuth.
Here's the list.
here's the list of things we're going to do.
That you really wasn't going to get your password and it really was separate and here's what's happening, it would have been a smarter way to do it.
Right.
Speaking of which, one story on the feed is that there, a White House official who left Google, his Buzz friends revealed that he was communicating with his old Google colleagues, in some people's view, a little too much.
Ooh.
So.
Ooh. Interesting. Very interesting. So Howard Stern apparently, I'm sure he doesn't listen to This Week in Google. Unless he's a lot geekier than I thought. But of course, you can't mention Howard Stern without 50 listeners sending him clips, hoping that he'll say something about it. So we talked last week about the fact that he was still using Lotus Notes. And
I think Gina was actually the meanest, making fun of him for it.
I was, and you know, I'm so happy that I got to make fun of Howard because I'm not a big Howard fan. I just like the idea that I got to bust his chops, sort of.
Well, he has a rationalization. Here's Howard Stern from the show.
Keyboard. I need it to be with hard keys. I hate that keyboard on the iPhone, and also, you know, I have Lotus Notes. It doesn't work that well on the iPhone. And by the way, there was a show the other day that Jeff Jarvis appeared on where he made fun of me for using Lotus Notes. He said, boy, Howard's really antiquated for using Lotus Notes. He goofed on me. The reason I use Lotus Notes, Jeff Jarvis, is because I was told that it is the most secure software.
Told by his tech guy who was an IBM employee for 17 years, I might add.
Right.
It's the most secure software. You never.
So then I got an email from Jeff Schick, who is that guy who's been advising Howard from the beginning, and he's having me in at the end of the month to show all the wonders of how Lotus Notes is used by the Stern
crew. My worst nightmare.
So that does sound like a nightmare.
Better you than us, Jeff.
I get to see how Baba Booey uses Lotus Notes.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, having been forced by Ziff Davis to use Lotus Notes for 10 years from 1994 to 2004, I can tell you, I don't care if it's secure. I couldn't care less.
Yeah, it's so secure that Howard can't access it on his phone. Yeah. You know, I was thinking that I was really mean and I made fun of him. And then I was thinking, you know, if an enterprise person, you know, if someone like Howard came to me and said, I need to know what email server, software or system should I install at my company? I don't even know what I would say.
Yeah, what would you tell him?
I mean, what would you tell him?
BlackBerry.
It's like the choices are like Notes, Exchange.
Well, and what are you trying to protect? Fart jokes? I mean, I love
Howard. This is the other thing is like email security. But, like as soon as you send an email, it's insecure. It's a postcard.
It's inherently insecure.
Right. So I was like, okay, well, he's concerned about getting his like inbox getting hacked. Right. I mean, that's the security.
I was trying to figure out what he was talking about, to be honest. What's the security? Are you not going to get spam? No. Are you not going to get phishing schemes? No. Is your mail somehow magically safe once it emerges from the server? No. So I'm not sure exactly what he's talking about.
No, I think what he gets is group sharing of writing and things like that with his crew. But, you know, these days I'd tell him to use Docs.
Yeah.
I wouldn't push Wave quite yet.
No. Google Apps, though. Yeah.
Google Apps. Yeah. You know, I was talking with, there's a guy named John Payton who now, he ran the Spanish language publisher, biggest Spanish language publisher in the U.S. He now is heading a new job at a really beaten down newspaper company called Journal Register. And full disclosure, I'm on his board of advisors. But as I was at the whiteboard this week with John, it occurred to me that he really could publish the entire newspaper with Google Docs, Google Apps, WordPress, and Flickr. And it really works, especially if you put the print stuff last. The only thing it can't do is fit copy to a page and a layout. But if you do that last in the process, everything else, imagine if a newsroom structure were entirely on a blog platform and you do things as a process and you do them in the open and you get people to contribute things to you through Flickr and through the blog, and you do collaborative documents through apps, it really becomes a new way to publish news products.
Do it. I want to see this.
Yeah, no kidding.
Gina, okay, fine. We'll get your advice.
Okay. Excellent.
I signed up for something called VaultPress. I'm kind of intrigued by this, talking about security. It's something from Matt Mullenweg, the guy who created WordPress, was the original WordPress writer. His company, Automattic, is doing it. And I've signed up for a beta. I haven't heard from it. The idea is it secures your WordPress blog and backs up your data somehow magically. It's a plugin that will act as a backup service. There are WordPress plugins, but it also apparently monitors your site looking for hacking activity. And people who, like me, who use WordPress, this is our biggest fear.
I think between this and Backupify, which we talked about a couple times on the show, I think I see a real trend here in this notion of security and portability.
Yeah. Yeah. You need to pay attention. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very good. And Matt, you know, Matt created one of the first best comment spam protectors.
Yes.
Akismet. He is thinking that way for the benefit of the blogosphere.
And the Hello Dolly plugin. Which I can never really understand why it exists.
I have to. I mean, I'm a nerd, so I want to use rsync. But I actually pay for two different web hosting plans so that I can like sync one to the other.
What a good idea.
Back up that way.
So you could fail over. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's
exactly
the right way to do it. That's a very, very good idea.
I'm sure that the WordPress plugin is much easier for, to hook up.
Well, maybe not. It's $20 a month, maybe. They don't know yet. I told them to charge less. And they asked me, if you want to be in the beta, they said, how much? I said, 10.
Five.
Five. Matt, what do you do? How do you back up Metafilter?
We have two servers, like a web and a database server. They're copying nightly to each other and then to a third box that's outside of that. And then we also just threw in Dropbox as a fourth.
Oh, that's neat.
Center burns down, right, you know, we still have a backup of the database.
It doesn't take much to, you know, I've been hacked several times on my WordPress blog. It only has to happen once before you start really thinking of arcane ways to make sure that never happens again.
Yeah, it's true. Mine has to. Matt, the entire Metafilter database is in Dropbox?
The nightly backups, I think, are 20 or 30 gigabytes. And that's like 3 million comments, about half a million posts. I mean, 20 gigs to me seems huge for a database, but...
It is.
It's probably 3 to 4 million items.
Wow, that's amazing. Very cool.
That is.
Yeah.
Over what period?
10 years. Yeah. That's 10 years of activity. But like, if I lost that, I mean, the whole thing's dead. We actually had a problem with a major database maintenance night. You know, we lost like 24 hours of one site, which was bad. It was like 1,500 comments and like 100 posts. And we rescued as many as we could out of Google Cache. But that was like, and then people would email in what they had in their browser cache.
Oh, that's bad.
I mean, we had to like build tools in a matter of an hour or two that would let us repopulate the database and stuff. And we came back with, we got about 70% of it back, like one day's. But to do that for 10 years would be horrible.
Yeah.
Losing all that data.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Oh.
It seems like $20 a month seems outrageous just for a blog.
It does seem like a lot.
Unless you're like GigaOm or something. I mean, if you're just a guy with a WordPress blog, I would think $5 is the most. Because I imagine you can do an export from WordPress and toss that to Dropbox.
I have a plugin that mails my entire database to Gmail every night.
Yep, me too. I use that one too.
Yeah, and so now I have it in Gmail, and it's it's not that big and
a few megabytes. Yeah,
and then periodically I'll go through and delete old versions. Mm-hmm. It's really handy. It's very easy. And that's free. I'm glad to know. I'm glad to know I'm using the same one Gina is.
Yeah. I'm also rsyncing MySQL dump. So, you know, redundancy is good.
Yeah.
Not to be, you know.
And what are you doing, Mr. Nya-Nya? What are you doing, Nya-Nya?
I beg Jake to back up once in a while.
Yeah.
So what else can I do?
Yeah, what else can you do? Exactly. What's your choice?
He rolls his eyes at me the way he did when we went off to the Apple Store today. And, you know.
Oh, Dad.
Yeah.
Speaking of cool, Google engineers have recreated Quake 2 in HTML5, obviously a demo of what you can do to in performance for HTML5. Unless this was an April Fool's. I don't think it was.
I'm so glad that's over.
I know. I hate April Fool's Day.
I hate April
You have to think about everything you read. Is this real? Could this really be?
And Google now goes all out. I mean, they go all out for April Fools. Bro. It really is part of the culture, kind of hacker culture. Pranks is like part of it. So April Fools is. But they like, I mean, they're a lot.
And they do okay. But the problem in general is that you have millions and millions of people who are not funny every other day of the year. They think that date makes them funny.
So let's see. To this year, they renamed themselves Topeka.
That was okay.
Oh, that's funny. In a very simple one. As a simple tip of the hat. To the fact that the town of Topeka renamed itself to Google Kansas, trying to get the Google, you know, community fiber initiative there. A few years ago, they did the toilet internet service provider, a free broadband service, Google TISP. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, they do a nice job of the design, so you really believe what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
better Matt would say than they did with YouTube.
Yeah. Sign up for
it's
a free.
Something about Google's April Fool's jokes. It's like there's unfunny on the web, and there's like mean, and there's lying. But then Google, it's like the nerd in the back of the room who I don't know.
He's
trying really hard, but it's not.
It's
funny
really
at all.
Awkward. It's true.
Yeah, it's just like okay. I mean, my
card
problem,
there, Norbert.
My biggest problem with April Fools is the believable ones and getting snookered by people you trust. I hate that. Like, I believe the Michael Arrington nuclear power. I was like, well, there's a lot of green people talking about, we kind of have to think of nuclear power again. I was like, Google's working on nuclear power. They're working on crazy fusion.
They're doing green stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're trying cold fusion in a magical box. Yeah. Like fuel cells is what they're into. And like nuclears,
why not?
The greatest. Yeah. I was
why
like,
not?
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah. It was false. He made it up.
I hate that. I hate it when that happens. So you can go, it's a GWT port of, I like that. This is a GWT port of Quake 2. Now, easy to install. You have to install Ogg Vorbis and Lame. That's for the audio. On Linux, you run sudo apt-get install Vorbis tools. You just use apt-get or Mac ports on the Mac. Then you build the server, install the resources, and navigate to localhost 8080 and your GWT Quake, and there you go. You got a Quake server running. Have you done this yet, Gina?
I have not.
It's very
but I'm
tempting.
Realizing how, I'm realizing how the instructions to my software looks to regular people right now.
So I told you, Gina, right? Like, I always hate it when I end up on GitHub.
No problem.
Hey, I want ice cream. Everyone wants ice cream, right? Here, there's some salt, some ice.
Easy. Anybody can do this.
In 3 hours, you'll have ice cream.
Oh, dear.
I have quoted that line because it, you're absolutely right. I'm working on making the installation easier. In the meantime, I'll install Quake.
Yeah, you better. I don't think you need... Hey, you don't even need to have SVN or Git installed. This is just a simple apt-get. No problem.
No problem.
No problem. Let's see. What other stories are we working this week?
Well, I got a few fun ones. The Germans go nutty on privacy, and somebody sabotaged the Street View truck there or car.
No,
there.
They sabotaged it. How sad.
Meanwhile, it's getting trouble. There's an Australian minister, communications minister, who went ballistic on Google on radio this last week, really kind of wacky. And one of his complaints was that Eric Schmidt told Wall Street analysts, "We love cash." What's wrong with that? I have no
idea. Shocking. Shocking.
Australia, it's very frightening what's going on in Australia. It's almost as frightening as China. Australia wants to basically put a rating system and filter all web content and force it to happen, and it's getting wacky there.
Right. He says Google's doing more filtering than we're doing. Says, so when people say, shouldn't we just leave it up to the Googles of this world to determine what the filtering policy should be, make no mistake, anybody who wants to go onto Google's sites now and look up their filtering policy, this guy's just making this stuff up.
He's wacky.
Will actually find they filter more material on a broader range of topics than we are proposing to put forward. Oh, they're just nuts. Yep. Google, in fact, said that they were not going to voluntarily comply with the Australian.
But you got stuff
government.
Going on all over. You got the Digital Millennium Act. I mean, you got stuff Kevin Marks talked about last week in the UK, Digital Britain. You got this in Australia. You right. obviously have China going on. It's frightening stuff for the internet, I think, at some point.
It's got to be very
once again,
hard.
Google's
for Google.
Our defender.
Yeah, it's got to be very. Well, they did cave eventually to the Australia.
Well, Google did sign up this week for Digital Due Process, which is a group of a bunch of companies trying to. At digitaldueprocess.org, trying to guarantee our rights better on the internet in terms of better protection of our stored data, better protection of our location privacy, better monitoring against people who would better protection against monitoring of what we do, and better protection against bulk data requests. And, you know, I think it's important work, and it was just formed this last week with a bunch of people, including AOL, ACLU, AT&T, and others.
Hmm. Well, I'll tell you what. I think that's that pretty much covers what's going on. I want to go back to my iPad. So let's get our our tip, number, and tool of the week, and we can wrap
this.
It's
like this. Christmas morning, huh, Leo?
It is. It's so hard. Play. You're making me eat breakfast, and I just want to go to the tree. Man, this is hard. Gina Trapani, do you have a tip of the week this week?
My tip of the week is for all of you people who didn't get an iPad, who are interested to know what Gmail and the rest of the apps look like. If you want to check it out in your browser, you can do so. I'm using this Firefox extension called User Agent Switcher, where you can, I mean, this isn't going to be any really new news to our listeners, our tech-savvy listeners. But if you use User Agent Switcher, you can enter an iPad user agent, and it makes your browser look as if it's an iPad. So then you can visit Gmail and other apps and see what the interface is like for the iPad, even without having one. And the link for the, you need a string to describe the user agent. It's in the story linked on the friend feed.
Yeah. So what is the user agent for the iPad? Is it Safari iPad or?
It is Mozilla /5.0 iPad U CPU iPhone OS 3.2 like Mac OS 10.
Why does it have Mozilla in there? I don't understand.
And then it says Apple WebKit 5.3.1, a couple of version numbers.
Wow.
HTML like Gecko. Yeah, it's long. I'm not sure why Mozilla is in there. I wonder if Mozilla's in there for the iPhone. Let me see.
I think a lot of user agent strings have Mozilla in it, but there's no Mozilla in Safari. That's the thing. There isn't.
Yeah, the iPhone 3.0 user agent also starts with Mozilla. So I'm not sure. A question maybe for the chat room or for next week.
Mm-hmm. Somebody should tell us. Our number of the week, Mr. Jeff Jones.
All right, let me look at the latest number here right now. 4,150.
4,150.
I went to my Karnak. 4,150. I put my iPad against my head. I mean, the digital Karnak. Of course, Karnak is a reference that won't mean anything to 95% of this audience.
Oh, isn't that sad? Only the old folks know that one.
Before there was a Jay Leno, I don't want to. So 4,150 is the number of related articles on Google News today about the iPad.
Wow.
And, you know, it does strike me there's a serious point here is that that's what's wrong with the architecture of news. And that's not even blog posts. That's just articles. It means that there's a lot of people who are rewriting the same stuff over and over and over again, and we can't afford that anymore. And it's this magnificent hype. Of course, I waited just an hour after the line was gone. I went in, I bought the thing. We overdid the Apple hype. But it also says that the architecture of the news business, the ecosystem, is wildly wasteful, filled with ego and repetition. So that's my happy moment for the day.
Well, Well, that's but news has always been that way, isn't it? A pack mentality.
Yeah, can't afford it anymore.
Yeah, maybe, we don't need to do it anymore.
No, do what you do best. Link to the rest.
Yeah, yeah. I don't really have a tool. My tool is going to be the iPad, but it has nothing to do with Google. So,
all I'm going to play with for the rest of my evening.
Does Google have any iPad apps that are notable or that aren't available on Android or the iPhone already?
No, not that I know of. No. Although I was just playing with Google Earth, it works, but it doesn't scale. You know, they don't have an iPad specific version of it. Gmail is the only thing that they the only nod at all to the existence of the iPad.
The web app.
I will confess that I did take my iPad to the bathroom already.
Yes.
You?
Not yet. I just got it.
Are you taking it to bed tonight?
I'm definitely taking it to bed. I warned my wife. Honey.
Oh, man.
Matt, what about you? Any personal confessions here for your iPad relationship?
I think it will be, unfortunately, the best bathroom reader on the planet. too much information, but
Oh, dear.
I think I need to build a new little shelf. You need to build a dock. That's the real geek thing to do.
A
dock into the wall.
To hold your iPad.
Right. Now, the other thing I wonder is, I'm not sure yet whether I read the New York Times on my iPhone on the subway. I see other people reading it on the Kindle on the subway. Is it too obnoxious to pull out the iPad on the subway?
Wait a couple of weeks and then.
Yeah, give it a few weeks.
But everybody will.
Yeah.
You just want to let somebody spot it. Spot somebody else doing it first.
It's like flaunting your bling.
Yeah, or you could just get a cover that really is, kind of surreptitious, looks just like it's a notebook. Put it inside a newspaper, something like that.
I like that play. I'll put it inside Time Magazine.
They'll never know.
I mean, the new business model from the New York Times.
One more thing, the reference earlier to the Yahoo research scientist who did great work on looking at Twitter and Bitly stats to look at influence is Duncan Watts.
Duncan Watts, there you go.
I wanted to give credit where it was due.
Credit to Duncan. Well, it was a fun time, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us. I know you probably had other things you could do, like play with your iPad.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks for having me, though.
We really appreciate it. Go to Metafilter to see the 30-gigabyte database of amazing things that have been collected over the last decade at metafilter.com. It really is a wonderful site, a must visit. It's what the web was made to do. Jeff Jarvis is the author of What Would Google Do? That's his book. Not yet available in the iBookstore any day now.
Figure that out. So, Gina, I got to ask you, after this last hour, did it change your odds at all of getting it?
No, I'm holding out. Nope, okay. I'm going to wait.
All right. You're tough.
I'm good.
That's interesting.
Wow.
Very interesting. Jeff's...
I'm a software geek. I'm not so much of a hardware geek. I will go to the Apple Store and check it out, but I'm not convinced yet.
Well, you're tough.
I appreciate all of you, though, figuring out
all
the stuff.
You own a Kindle, though. This is like 1,000 times better than a Kindle.
I do. It's true. Well, this is the deal that I made myself. I'm going to sell the Kindle and the iPod Touch, and then I'm going to get a tablet, and it could be the iPad.
So you're not sure which tablet.
I have to sell those things first. That's the prerequisite. I have to sell those things first in order to make the move, because I can't have another gadget. I need to simplify and reduce.
Help a sister out. Buy her Kindle.
Once I get my eBay auctions up, I will be letting you all know.
Or just buy 12 copies of the Complete Waveguide.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes. The Complete Guide to Google Wave is available at CompleteWaveGuide.com. And Gina's blog is SmarterWear.org. And Jeff's blog is BuzzMachine.com. You can watch this show now on iTunes. Watch the video. Download it on your iPad. It looks fabulous. Of course, you can watch us live. We're at 2:15 Pacific, 5:15 Eastern. 21:15 UTC on live.twit.tv and on Google's YouTube. It's youtube.com/twit, and we're right there in the Twig channel. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.